chapter 11, text 18. There's three verses together, 18 through 20, so we'll read the translation. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various professions known as Rita, Amrita, Mrita, Pramrita, and Satyanrita. But one should not at any time accept the profession of a dog. The profession of the Unshashila, which means collecting grains from the field, is called Vrita. The profession of collecting without begging is called Amrita. The profession of begging grains is called Mrita. Tilling the ground is called Pramrita. And trade is called Satyanrita. We use the Sanskrit names for different professions. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, however, is called shwa-vritti, the profession of the dogs. Specifically, brahmanas and kshatriyas should not engage in the low and abominable service of shudras. Brahmanas should be well acquainted with all Vedic knowledge, and kshatriyas should be well acquainted with the worship of the demigods. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturbharanyam maya shristam guna karma vibhagasha. The four divisions of human society were created by the Supreme Lord, according to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them. Formerly, the principle of dividing human society into four sections, namely Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, was strictly followed. But because of gradual neglect of the Varnashram principles, Varnasankara population developed, and the entire institution of Varnashram Dharma has now been lost. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is a Shudra, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. And finding anyone who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is very difficult. Although the Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, it is trying to re-establish the divine Varnashram institution. For without this division of society, there cannot be any peace or prosperity anywhere. Text 21. Shamo dhamas tapa shocham santosha shantir arjavam jnanam dayat yutatmatvam satyam cha brahmalakshanam. The symptoms of a brahmana are control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity and penance, cleanliness, satisfaction, forgiveness, simplicity, knowledge, mercy, truthfulness, and complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In the institution of Varnashram Dharma, the symptom of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasi are all described. The ultimate aim is achyutatmatvam, which means to think always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu. To make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to become a Brahmana with the above-mentioned symptoms. Om Jnanatimirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. So here in this verse, in the first verse, Prabhupada mentions that ISKCON is attempting to establish the Daivi Varnashram system. And if this is established, then we can have peace and prosperity in society. The social system depends on the members of that society, or the members of that social system. They have to have particular qualities, qualities which will generate an atmosphere of peace and prosperity, which is the ultimate goal of this, which is one goal of the Varnashram Dharma system. The ultimate goal of Varnashram Dharma is liberation and God consciousness. So then in the next verse, Prabhupada, or Shukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva is explaining that in order to develop Daivi Varnashram system, it depends on Brahmins, because they're the head, as we heard yesterday. And they have to have particular qualities, which are mentioned throughout the Shastras. The 26 qualities of a devotee, Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions, Bhagavad Gita mentions in different purports, in 13th chapter, 16th chapter. seventh canto of Bhagavatam. So here, again, we're reminded of the qualities of a brahmana, which are the primary qualities which create an atmosphere of peace and prosperity in society, because everyone follows the example of the leader, and a leader of society is the brahmana. So we can examine some of these qualities and see how to improve our adoption of these qualities. So the first one is shamo. It's almost like the same verse in Bhagavad Gita, samo dhammastapa shocham shantir arjam evacha gyanam vijnanam ashtakam. So shamo means control the mind. So of course, the mind is very difficult to control, but the whole process of Krishna consciousness emphasizes and gives a facility for controlling the mind. And the best way to control the mind is to always engage the mind in Krishna's service. In this 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that, gives a nice analogy. He said, controlling the mind is like an expert horse tamer, a person riding a horse. If he's riding a horse, he knows that he's trying to tame a horse. It's a new horse. He's trying to tame it and break it in, make it a domesticated animal, work animal. So he's riding the horse, and so he won't pull too hard on the reins. He won't pull back too hard on the reins. He'll allow the horse sometimes to run a little bit, and sometimes he'll gently pull back. Whoa! He'll pull back gently, slow the horse down. But throughout the whole time, even when he lets the horse run freely, he's holding on to the reins. The reins are the connection to the bridle, the mouthpiece. And simultaneously to controlling, holding on to the reins, he's keeping a destination or the goal in mind. I want to take the horse from here to there. So Vishwanath Chakravartipad, he explains that the yogi, devotee, bhakti yogi, he is like the expert horse rider. And the mind is like the horse. And he doesn't force the mind to submit to too harsh program of austerities. Not that he, okay, now we understand we should be like Raghunath Das. Okay, let us eat one cup of buttermilk every other day. He doesn't artificially torture his body like that, because the mind will rebel. He'll follow this austerity maybe for one day or 2 days, and then he'll go to the market and buy 10 kilos of sweets and eat 10 kilos of sweets and be sick for a month. Because the mind will rebel and force him to submit himself. So he isn't too harsh, he isn't too austere, and he doesn't allow the senses or the mind to say, yes, let's engage in sense gratification, let's enjoy illicit life. No, he pulls back. When the mind suggests, let's enjoy intoxication or gambling, or one of the four principles, I mean, breaking the religious principles, he pulls back. Hey, wait, whoa, mind, slow down. He doesn't allow the mind that. But he gets some freedom of the senses. So he said the yogi is like that. So this is called moderation. We must be moderate, the path of moderation. Krishna defines in Gita, the yogi is like that. He doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. He's moderate. And this way, gradually, the mind will come under his control by the blessings of Rishikesh, Krishna. So this mind is very difficult to control. And sometimes we see, because there's another principle here, it's mentioned, shamo dhammo. And they go together. If you can't control the shamo, you can't control the dhamma. You control the mind and control the senses. This is dhamma, means control the senses. So the senses, they become controlled by engaging in Krishna's service. This is the obvious thing. But we see a nice explanation in 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Says that even one who is endeavoring, he's a spiritualist, and he's trying to control the senses, he's following the four principles, he's restricting himself, trying to live a pure life, and he's serious. He's a serious devotee. But we see, even with a serious devotee, due to his prarabdha karma, due to his lingering material desires, he may be drawn or compelled or forced into sense gratification. In other words, he may have a temporary slip. He may fall down into overeating or some other minor infraction, you could say. A temporary fall down from the strict control of his senses. He's trying and he's controlling day after day. He's eating very regulated, but then one day comes and too much eating, Or he's getting up every day at the proper time for Mangalartik, and one day he decides, oh, I don't feel like it. He turns off the clock. Somehow his mind becomes lazy. So it's explained that the senses and mind, they can stay controlled when we keep our intelligence associating with the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness creates a certain purity within the mind and senses. So the whole practice of Krishna consciousness is to force ourselves to adopt and to uphold the regulations of Krishna consciousness, of rising early and eating at regulated times. In ashram life, one is forced into regulation. And gradually, by the force of the regulation of the ashram, at least in the old days, it was very difficult because prasadam was served at a certain time, and if you weren't there in time, you wouldn't get prasadam. And there's no question of like taking prasadam, hiding in your locker, or keeping it here and there. It was pretty strict, at least in some temples. Prasadam was served out three times in a day or twice in a day, and that's when you took prasadam. So by the arrangement of the ashram, there are imposed regulations and control on the mind and senses of the ashramites. So gradually, the mind is such a thing, such an entity, that as we engage in Krishna's consciousness, gradually it becomes spiritualized, it becomes purified, and it makes less demands. It doesn't demand so much for us to enjoy the senses. It doesn't push us, yes, enjoy your senses. It becomes tamed, just like the horse. So the senses, the analogy that Vishwanath gives is sometimes this aspiring transcendentalist, he may fall down to sense gratification. But if he's sincere about his practices, he's like the warrior in the field, the Kshatriya. He goes in the field and he's fighting against the enemy. So the devotee who's practicing, sincere devotees practicing Krishna consciousness, we say, Prabhupada gave us this phrase, that to be a devotee means to declare a war against Maya. There's a war, the Maya, the illusory energy, the tendency for sense gratification, our latent material desires, our propensities, our natural propensities due to this material body for sense enjoyment, they are our enemy. The enemy is within. Our own karma is our enemy. So we're fighting a war against that, which is ourselves, which is our lower selves, our lower nature, our material propensities. So like the warrior, he's fighting against the enemy on the battlefield, and sometimes he's injured, and he gets shot with an arrow. But because of his strength as a Kshatriya, and his courage, his strength means his physical attributes, his physical strength, and courage means his mental strength. Courage is a quality of the mind and heart, a courageous person. A person may have a big body, be very physically strong, and have no courage, because he doesn't have Kshatriya blood. I mean, very strong, and then some dacoits come and he hides in his room. Oh, dacoits. Because he's a Shudra nature. Or maybe Brahmin or whatever. You know, he may have a big, strong body, but then the dacoits come and he runs. But if he has Kshatriya spirit, if he's courageous, then he'll run to fight. So the warrior, on the basis of his strength and courage, he'll keep fighting. Even though he's injured, he'll keep fighting. And though he's injured in the field, he'll go on to victory. He won't be defeated. So in the same way, the progressive devotee, the sincere devotee, is like a warrior in the field. He's a warrior in the field of the material energy. He's a warrior in the material world. A spiritual warrior. And he's a real hero. Because on the strength of his Krishna consciousness, and the courage he gets by remembering the lotus feet of his spiritual master. Because his spiritual master is also a great warrior. He's victorious. He's a Maharati, or we say a Atirati, or whatever. There's some term that someone can fight with a lack of soldiers or something. There's a Maharati who can fight with 10,000, but someone can fight with isn't a lack of soldiers, an Atirati or something. So our guru is like that. He can take on the whole material energy. The whole material energy comes to our Gurudev with folded hands and says, Guru, oh Gurudev, how may I serve you? So he's successful by his surrender, his absolute surrender. So by remembering the lotus feet of Guru, the disciple gets courage. And he cries out to Guru in times of need, hey Gurudev, please help me. So in this way he goes on, even though there's some temporary, he's defeated temporarily, gets a few arrows in his chest. Maya gets a fluke, hits him with a few blows, knocks him down, he overeats a few times or misses a few Mangalartiks or whatever. But he picks himself up by his spiritual strength and his courage, and he goes on to victory. It's not whether you fall down that counts, or not how many times you fall down that counts. It's how many times you pick yourself up that counts. If you fall down four times and pick yourself up three times, that's not good. That means you're down. But if you fall down four times and you pick yourself up four times, then you're situated. So this is the nature of Krishna consciousness. Controlling the mind and senses is a practice. And as Krishna says, by constant practice and determination, by perseverance, we come to this platform. Because as we mentioned, it is natural for the mind to be attracted to material sense objects. As Rupa Goswami says, just as the mind of a young man is naturally attracted to the form of a young woman, or the mind of a young woman is attracted to the form of a young man. Oh, my dear Gopinath, my dear Govindadev, please allow my mind to be attracted to you in the same spontaneous and natural way. So this is a matter of spiritualization or purification of the mind. And that's what yoga is all about. And that's what bhakti is all about. There's no possibility of controlling the mind and senses unless we become attracted to Krishna. And he's all attractive. That's why Krishna says, I'm offering ras. He says in Gita in the second chapter, I'm giving you ras. Are you tasting it? Rasa varjama sopyasya tram jasva nivartate. Here, drink this ras. Like we have soma ras and so many rasas, you drink and you become strong. But Krishna is saying, I'm giving you the ras. If you drink this ras, then you'll get tram jasva nivartate. You'll get a higher taste. You become fixed in consciousness. This is the ras of bhakti, bhakti ras, pure devotional service. So as we engage in devotional service with purity of motivation, purity of intention, and purity of attitude, then the result becomes very strong. The result is the mind becomes purified by the pure application of bhakti. But when we apply ourselves to bhakti, or we practice the limbs of bhakti, but we mix in that bhakti ras, if we dilute that bhakti ras with the poison of gyan and the poison of karma, then it becomes a mishra, it becomes a kitri bhakti, becomes a mixed bhakti. So the results of such mixed bhakti are very less. And that means the mind takes long time to purify the mind. When we're doing karma mishra bhakti, it takes lifetimes to purify the mind. But if we actually can practice bhakti in a pure way, which is based on motivation, what is our motive? What is our attitude? What is our desire when we're executing? I'm doing bhakti. I'm serving life membership department so I can collect money and put some aside for me and my mother in Calcutta and my cousin in Puri. And maybe after a few years I can get my property in Radhakund and Gordham, and I'll move to Gordham and ISKCON Haribo. So if we have our motivation, this is called karma mishra bhakti, mix up. So your mind will stay very much black for lifetimes. And every service, oh, I'm doing the deity worship. Oh, big donation in front of Thakur. That's too big for Krishna. Why would anybody offer 500 rupees to Krishna? I can spend that better. Put it in your pocket. So you're serving the deities, but your heart is black. And you're keeping it black because you're holding on. So this type of bhakti, but real bhakti, develops the attraction for Krishna. And as we develop attraction for Krishna, we start to drink ras amrita, bhakti ras. And when you drink a ras, it's called ras amrita. It is in soma ras. It gives strength. It gives mental strength, sensual strength, heart strength, mind strength, purity. And when one is pure and he's developing his attraction for Krishna, then the mind becomes the friend. So the other qualities are here. Austerity and penance, tapa. Prabhupada gave a nice definition of austerity. He said, what is austerity? Does that mean to whimsically submit the body to some strenuous torture? Is that austerity? Oh, I'm going to control my senses. I'm only going to eat once in a day khichdi for... So you do once in a day khichdi for 1 month and then five times a day? No, austerity means the difficulty and the trouble that a disciple takes to fulfill and execute the order of the spiritual master. That is austerity. Beautiful definition Prabhupada gave. Austerity means that you voluntarily, you willfully and voluntarily accept some difficulty to attain some shreyas, to attain some ultimate benefit. The difficulty of rising early every day, the difficulty of controlling your senses, the difficulty of following the four regulative principles, no matter what, come hell or high water, as they say. I'll never break these principles. I've taken a vow. Today, tomorrow, in the night, in the dark, in the day, any place, I'll never break. This is my courage I've got from Guru. This is our sankalpa, our mental resolve and affirmation. And in the beginning, sometimes a new devotee has to kind of repeat this sankalpa to his mind, program his mind in such a way, yes, I really want to follow these principles. I must follow these principles. Many people will say, yes, I want to live a pure sattvic life. Yes, I want to follow these principles. But without association, without the purifying foundation of bhakti yoga, it is very difficult to maintain such a position of purity. But we have that on our side. So our austerity is to execute Krishna consciousness, to follow all the rules of the spiritual master, the big ones and the small ones. Another principle is mentioned here is santosh, which means satisfaction. With satisfaction, a devotee is satisfied. A real devotee, he simply thinks, whatever I've achieved by the mercy of Krishna, I am satisfied with that. Whatever I have obtained by the mercy of Guru, I am satisfied. Subhag Maharaj yesterday was giving a class. He was explaining, giving different examples and stories of brahmanas who were satisfied with nothing. One brahman was satisfied with eating tamarind leaves and some rice, tamarind leaves from the tree. When the king wanted to offer him some seva, oh, let me buy you some nice sabji and some shak and some, you know, eggplant and so many bhaji and everything. No, I have no need. Please, I don't have no need for your seva. But what do? You're just eating rice? No. If I want some sabji, I can climb the tree. I can pull down the tamarind leaves and mix inside, and I'm very happy. Tamarind leaves and rice is very nice. So he's satisfied. So this satisfaction is the nature of Krishna consciousness, that it satisfies the mind. Prabhupada once said that the ultimate satisfaction for the mind is for the mind to always rest on the lotus feet of Krishna. If our mind can rest there, then we can find satisfaction. And every day we're looking at Krishna in his palatable form of prasadam, and we're saying, swad prasad anadilo bhai. Swad prasad anadilo bhai. Say anamrita pao. Say anamrita pao. It's, oh Krishna, by taking this nice foodstuffs, I will get satisfaction. This is what we're saying. My senses and mind will become satisfied. Say anamrita pao by taking this Krishna prasad. And then when I'm satisfied, then I can call out, Radha Krishna guna gao. I can call out, I can glorify the qualities of Radha and Krishna. That's why we say, no bhojan, no bhajan. They have a phrase sometimes, there's some other Hindi phrase, Pundarik must be known. I can't remember, but it's basically the idea is no bhojan, no bhajan. If I don't eat, if I'm not, no bhojan means if I don't have a full belly, then I can't sing, what is it? Radha, Pit Bola, Radha Govinda Bole, Pit. Vajrade Govinde Fed Bolo Anande. So Vajrade Govinde, this is a very, it's an inside joke. Vajrade Govinde Fed Bolo Anande. That my pate, in Hindi pate means belly. Pate Bolo. If my belly is full, then I can do Radha Govinda Bhajan. So this is the principle, santosh, satisfaction. The devotee is satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And this is the principle. We should be satisfied with whatever we have. But unfortunately, because of the pushings of passion, because of Rajagun and Prarabdha Karma, they team up together and they push the mind. More, more, more. Every one of us is like a perverted reflection of Govardhan Leela. Every one of our minds is like a perverted reflection of Giridhari when he was saying, Aniyor, 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 give me more, give me more, give me more. So our minds are like the perverted reflection of life, of that pastime. Our minds are always saying, give me more, give me more. Temple president says, Mr. Krishnadas Grihasthaji, here's your 1,000 rupees maintenance. Oh, Prabhu, you know, I have 29 kids. Please, can't you give me more? Aniyor, Aniyor. Aniyor. And then the brahmachari comes in, oh, Mr. Mahamanji, I have 5 dhotis, but you know, I'm doing life membership, so I need silk, pure silk, pukka silk, 800 rupees a meter. My dear Mahaman, you know, please can you give me? So like this, the mind is pushing and not satisfied. More, aniyor, aniyor, aniyor. This is not the Brahman. The Brahman is self-satisfied, satisfied in the self. And the self will never be satisfied unless it's fixed on Krishna. Just when we're talking about the mind, when we're talking about the mind control, the mind and jagranita, we're talking about the mind and the senses, then we talk about satisfaction, they all go in a straight line. So if the mind is always thinking of material sense gratification, you will never ever be satisfied. You will always be dissatisfied. If your mind is hovering on the material platform, as long as the mind is thinking, I need this, I need that, or if I get this, I'll be happy, or if I have this, I'll be happy, if I obtain this or acquire this, I'll be happy, then guaranteed, you will always be unhappy and dissatisfied. Because the mind will never be satisfied by no matter how much you give it. It says that another quality here is knowledge. But if you get transcendental knowledge, then you can become satisfied. And transcendental knowledge, the analogy is given, is like in the forest, there's friction. Two trees come together and they rub together and create friction. And from the friction it creates fire. And the fire burns down the forest. So they say that if you have the combination of a bona fide spiritual master and a sincere and qualified disciple, when they come together, what happens is that combination is that there's a transferal of transcendental knowledge from the guru to the disciple. And when that disciple receives that transcendental knowledge, it burns up all his material desires. The friction of guru and disciple creates the fire of transcendental knowledge. The friction of guru and disciple creates the fire of transcendental knowledge, which burns down the forest of material enjoyment, which is thriving within the heart of the sadhaka. The forest of material enjoyment. There's one phrase that's given in Bhagavatam. It says that Well, that's basically the same phrase, that the fire of knowledge creates a fire. Now, transcendental knowledge is like a fire which burns up all of our desires for material sense enjoyment. Cleanliness. So what is cleanliness? It means internal and external purity. It doesn't mean washing the hands with soap and water. Of course, that is there. But real cleanliness means to always think how to engage in Krishna's service. Because our minds are considered polluted when they're full of false ego, egotism and false pride. This is considered a polluted mind. The extent to which we have false pride in our mind and egotism means how much polluted we are. So cleanliness means to be free from false ego and from false pride. That is internal cleanliness. And it says that cleanliness means to have a purity of desire. And the purity of desire means that our desire is one with Krishna, chutta atmatvam. To become one, achutta atmatvam is mentioned, one of the qualities. Is that whatever Krishna wants, I want. Whatever my Gurudev wants, I want. I want means calm, means desire. So cleanliness means to have a clean desire. And also to be clean in your dealings. How are you dealing and exchanging with the devotees? No diplomacy, please. No politics. Don't play with me. Don't play games with me, Prabhu. Oh, my dear Prabhu. What are you trying to do? I'm not a karmi. At least I'm trying not to be a karmi. Why are you playing diplomacy with me? Be clean in your dealings. Because another meaning of cleanliness, or actually there's one quality or simplicity. Simplicity and cleanliness are related because simplicity means to be straightforward in your dealings, which means to be clean in your dealings, clean in your behavior. So the meaning of simplicity is not to be a simpleton or to be a fool and not know how to tie your shoes or something, or how to put on your tilak. But simplicity means straightforwardness in dealings. You're so straightforward that you can even tell that even if your enemy comes to your door, you can tell him the truth. And you're so straightforward that this, like we sometimes, when people come meet a sadhu, they say, oh, he lives so simply. All he has is a lota. He has a lota and one kopin. He lives very simply. It's just this is one type of simplicity. But then if you start speaking to him and start finding out the position of his mind, you see it's full of false ego and false pride. So real simplicity is to have a pure and clean mind. And if you have a pure and clean mind, then your dealings and your interactions with others will be pure and clean. It's explained that there's one phrase we've heard. Maybe Prabhupada said it, I'm not sure. But he said, Krishna consciousness is easy for the simple-hearted, For the simple-hearted, for the clean-hearted, Krishna consciousness is easy. But for the crooked-minded, for one who has a crooked mind, unclean mind, diplomatic mind, one who has an unclean or crooked mind, Krishna consciousness or the execution of bhakti is a very difficult process. It's very difficult. But it's very simple, easy for one who has a simple mind. So this is simplicity. Another meaning, simplicity. So, then of course, truthfulness. Truthfulness means that we always speak the absolute truth. Because real truth is eternal. Real truth is eternal truth, and it's eternally beneficial. It's beneficial for everyone in all places at all times to speak the absolute truth. So truthfulness means to speak the absolute truth in a pleasing way. In a pleasing way and a satisfying way. What is pleasing and what is beneficial is topics of Krishna. Hari Katha, Leela Katha, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This is real truth, and this is the meaning of a Brahman having the quality of truthfulness. If someone has the propensity for finding faults in devotees and criticizing devotees, as in one purport is explained, this is not very much appreciated by saintly persons. Such so-called, in other words, you may call a thief, which is maybe a relative statement, a relatively true. You say, oh, so-and-so, Krishnadas is no good, or he did this bad thing. So maybe, according to time, place, and circumstance, he did a bad thing. But what is the benefit of your pointing it out? Not much. And then in 10 years from now, in a new time, in a new place and circumstance, Krishnadas may be a pure devotee. So what is the benefit of your fault-finding or criticizing? So truthfulness means to exist on the platform of the absolute truth, to be always absorbed in studying the Bhagavatam and studying the philosophy and then speaking the philosophy. And that will rectify all the relative inconsistencies. If you see inconsistencies in the environment of relativity, then that can be corrected by the injection of absolute truth. That can be corrected by the generation and the speaking of Hari Katha. We have to purify ourselves and purify the environment. Then anomalies and misbehavior will be removed from the scene. Devotees will become purified by the vibration of absolute knowledge, of pure truthfulness. Pure truth is Krishna. And then mercy. Mercy or austerity. I know one thing in the Bhagavad Gita gives us a very nice definition of a Brahminical austerity. It says austerity of the speech, which is along the same point we're speaking of. Austerity of the speech consists in speaking truthfully and beneficially and avoiding speech that offends. Austerity of the body consists of worshipping the Lord. Worshipping the Lord, worshipping the Vaishnavas, and keeping your environment simple, living simply, and following celibacy. That's austerity of the body. It's a great austerity in the age of Kali. If you say someone says, I want to be a devotee, can you explain? Oh, you have to give up this and this and this and this and this. What? What? Really? Impossible. As soon as you say you have to give up illicit connections with the opposite sex, if they say vegetarian, okay, I'm vegetarian. No smoking, intoxication, okay, I'm a yogi type. No gambling, okay, fine. And you have to give this up. What? My God. This is a prime necessity of life. How can you live without this? So this is an austerity of the body, celibacy. So these are austerities of the body and speech. And austerities of the mind consists in being straightforward in dealings, fixing your mind on Krishna, refraining from the tendency to find fault, and always engaging in Krishna consciousness, chanting Krishna's name, studying Bhagavatam. There's austerity for the mind, always be absorbed in philosophy. And mercy means to receive the mercy of Krishna and give it to others. And if we're giving the mercy, if we're giving Krishna's mercy by sankirtan and preaching, then we get satisfaction. Prabhupada explains one purport, that if one is not merciful to those that are not in Krishna consciousness, he will not feel satisfaction. Distribution, missionary work is the expression of mercy. And mercy is a quality of Vaishnava, which we must obtain. So as we obtain some mercy, we receive mercy from Guru and Krishna, then we distribute that in missionary activities, and by distributing mercy or preaching, we become satisfied. And he probably goes on to say, if we don't engage in preaching activities, we'll look for satisfaction in the material senses. We'll look for satisfaction in the material body. So therefore, preaching is a great blessing for us, is a great help for us. And this is the expression of mercy, to give Krishna consciousness to others. And complete surrender to Krishna. This is the goal of all our activities. This time or other, come to the platform of Atmanavedanam. Achyutatmatvam, Achyutatmatvam. To surrender our body, mind, and senses for the pleasure of Krishna. To act in such a way that Krishna is pleased. To speak in such a way that Krishna is pleased. To think in such a way that Krishna is pleased. To desire in such a way that Krishna is pleased. Which means guru, pleasing guru. Then this is conducive to coming to the platform of full surrender to Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.